All right, good. Just let me share my screen.
This meeting is being recorded.
Chazara de Poel. Good. Everyone can see the source sheet now? Excellent. Okay. So the last thing that we discussed on Tuesday was this idea of b'chavila liyado. We had seen that our Gemara prescribes two different kinds of remedies for Chazar de Poel and Dabra Aved. The two remedies were Sochar Aleh and Umatan. Within Sochar Aleh, and the Gemara had two versions. There's a standard version for the case where the Poel just backs out, and then you could be Sochar Ad Kedei Scharan. In a case where it's b'chavila liyado, where the Poel deposited some kalim in the Rishus, the Balabayas, so we can be Socher Ad Arbaim V'chamishim Zuz, which, you know, according to Rashi, was more than 10 times the value of the initial contract. And last time we discussed three different explanations for why B'chavila Liyada would make a difference in allowing you to be Socher up to a higher amount. So does anybody want to briefly give us the synopsis of those three reasons? Just use the hand-raising function, or you could just unmute yourself and scream out if that's easier. Anybody want to give us the brief synopsis of those three different shitos here? Let me pull it up here on the computer. Here are the three shitos here. Anybody remember offhand? Let's see. Gabe, you want to take a stab at it?
I think the hischayvus midas idea
that it's as if you're voluntarily obligating yourself, and then the third one was the kinyan idea. So we saw the Kenyan idea. The Kenyan idea, based off that sheet of the Rebbe of the Ritva, is that once the b'chavila liyado is just a proxy generally for determining whether there's a Kenyan, and when there's a Kenyan, then the liability of the Poel will be much higher, right? And it's only when there's no Kenyan that his liability is capped at ad kedei demehem. The second view was the idea of mitam hischayvos midas. This was the theory put forth by the Ritva and Ayin Hey, that mistama, Once he deposits the demei achavila mistama, he's willing to obligate himself for more. And the third shita was that was mentioned in the Pisrei Choshen, and I'll read it to you right now. The idea that when the chavila is baliyado, it offsets some concerns of cheskas mamon. And the underlying idea seems to be that the halacha doesn't want to make the poel. The halacha is not going to award the balabayas this higher award if it's going to have to cut into somebody else's cheskas mamon. It's not going to take away property from somebody. But if it's to just allow the balabayas to hold on to mamon that he's muchzak on, then it will allow him to make use of that chavila to cover his costs. So here's the Pisrei Choshen's formulation. This is in Ha'ar Lamed Vav. Uvlav hachi niskashe b'mayani achachma. Everybody can see my screen? Yeah, good. Ma tam b'chilek zeh. Why should the halacha distinguish between b'chavil liyado or lo b'chavil liyado? It sounds almost incidental to, you know, the fundamental questions of liability. If the poel is always liable to cover the balabai's cost up to 10 times the value of the contract, if he's chayev, it shouldn't depend on b'chavil liyado. And if he's not chayev, even if b'chavil liyado, it shouldn't help the balabayas. So he answers, this is the Mayane Achachma, v'tirit she'hadavar b'safik, she'efshar she'ein derech b'nei adam lahotzi yosir michdei scharan. The halach is kind of misupuk as to whether or not it's permissible to hold the poel liable for more than k'dei damim of the contract. V'lochein kishuhu muchzak ein motzin miyado. And therefore, everything's just going to depend on the cheskas mamon. I don't like the formulation of safek, because that sounds almost too arbitrary. But you might say that the halacha, it's not that it's mesupuk, but the halacha thinks the balabayas, let's say, has a weak claim right to recover more than the value of the contract. And whether he's able to act on that weak claim right will depend on what he's going up against. If he's going up against the cheskas mamon, then the balabayas won't be able to act on that weak claim right. But if the Cheskas Mammon is in the Bala Bias's favor, then maybe he will be allowed to act on it. Okay? I think that's just one, I think that's a cleaner way of making sense of this idea that the Pischei Choshen is telling us from the Mayan Echachma. Yoni, we have a hand?
Yeah, I'd add that I think what's interesting is that like the suffix, it's not a, like a dina, just like we don't know how Yelacha Paskins. It's like the suffix is whether or not Derech B'nei Adam Lahotzi Yoter Mikveh Tara, like whether or not in general or in this particular instance, the people had like, the Poel had the daft to, you know, deny himself for any potential losses.
It's like a,
so, like, it sounds like in some way, it's similar to the Smichuta, it's just that because we're not sure if there really was Smichuta, that's why we have to really rely on this, like, Mukhazakut idea.
Yeah, that makes it almost like it's like a suffix in Metzias. We're not sure exactly what the standard is, and so we'll decide that suffix on the basis of the Cheskas Mammon. That's how you're putting it.
Right, but like the principle Chayv in general should be, or at least would be, like the Rishon version of Smichuta.
Right, so the way you have it, the way you're understanding it, this idea that Mayan HaChachma is a variation off the Ritva's understanding of the Sugya.
Yeah.
The way I understand it is that it's slightly different. It's really this kind of contractual principle of, yeah, you do have a weak claim right against him, but whether you can assert that weak claim right will depend on what Cheskas Mammon, what kind of Cheskas Mammon is opposing you. But yeah, I definitely hear your suggestion. And I think, yeah, what you're saying is probably more consistent with the language of the Pischei Choshen and the Mayan HaChachma. Okay, good. Now, as we pointed out, Adam Mann has a hand.
I guess, like, on that point, but if Yoni's reading, I think it's a little harder to figure out how exactly you deal with Lochein, Kishehu Muchzak, Emotim, Miyando.
I think Kishehu Muchzak, when the Poel is Muchzak, we're not going to cut into his savings.
Right, but what would that have to do with the das that went into the original contract?
Right, so I think on Yoni's read, like, we're misupuk about whether this is really the custom such that it's sufficient to generate the hischaivus from the poel. Right, Yoni?
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is that there should be hischaivus based on smichutat, but we're not sure it exists. So to resolve that suffix, whether it really was, it's that's what we rely on this misupuk claim, and that's how we're going to resolve that suffix.
Right.
No.
Does that answer it, Adam?
Yes, I guess.
Yeah. Look, it's not, I think it's not so, as elegant as I think my interpretation of this is a little more elegant. It's a little cleaner, right? Because it's not.
Sharp shot.
Yeah, it's not a sharp shot. It's a little more of an elegant shot. Okay, good. Those are the three shitas. And as I pointed out last time, that seems to relate, these three shitas are going to relate to this broader question about whether the din of Bachavil Liyado is true for any mammon that you happen to have of the poel in your rishus, or whether it's limited specifically to the demei hachavila of the tools that the poel was going to use for the job that he was contracted for. Let me just again, we read that tshuva of the Marami Rutenberg, right, on the demei hachavila question that was cited in the Mordechai about you hired the melamed and he breaches, but you happen to have had a sefer of his that was pawned in your rishus. Everybody remember that discussion? Yeah, okay, good. I see Gabe's and raising it, nodding his head, and Donnie's raising his head and nodding his head. Adam also? Yeah?
I don't think I was here for it.
You weren't here on Tuesday?
I left.
Oh, you left in the middle, right? You left in the middle, right? Yeah, Kira, does this sound familiar?
Yep.
Okay, good. And Yoni? Yoni, sounds familiar? Okay, good. So here you get to see the two deos in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch here in Shin Lamed Gimel Vav summarizes both views. Keitzad Socher Alein Poel and Vigomrin Melachtan Shelo Tovad. Chol She Yosef Leilu HaPoel HaMachir Mamash HaPasak LeRishonim Notam HaRishonim Ad Kama Ad Kedei Scharan Shel Rishonim. And V'im Hoye Lehem Mamon Tachas Yado Socher LaHashlem HaMelacha Ad Arba Mochamishim Zuz V'chol Yom V'chol Poel. Even though the original poel is only 3 or 4, if it's bachavil liyado, then you could be socher ad arba mechamishim zuz. Notice though, in the Shulchan Aruch's formulation, he doesn't require that it be oso mamon. It doesn't have to be the demei chavila. Any mamon of the poel that you happen to have in your rishus is sufficient to allow you to be socher ad arbam b'chamishim zuz. That suggests that it's not about kinyan. It's not about some special hischaivos associated with the melacha. Although I think Yoni on Tuesday gave us a way to read it that it might be consistent. I think the best reading here is that there's no cheskas mamon issue. If you happen to have his property in your rishus, then you're mufsak on it. You're not going against the cheskas mamon, and you can use it to satisfy your cost in hiring new poalim. So in this first view in the Shulchan Aruch, it's any mamon of the poal that you happen to have in your possession. You can see the Ramah quotes the opposite view. V'yesh omrim hadasochar alein arabam mechamishim zuz, hainu dafka shetofes kli manusam. Aval shar dvarim lo. And that's the Mordechai Shita. So those are two deos about whether it's any mamon or dafka de kleo omenos. Okay. That's from what we just covered really on Tuesday. Now I want to move into our new sugya, and that is the question of whether you could compel specific performance. But I see we have a hand from Gabe. Gabe.
Yeah, I want to ask a question which comes up in the Ramah of the piece after you underlined.
Sure.
He notes that if there's davar avod mamish, right, if there's like a fish time which spoils and goes bad, then the poel would be chayav for that nezek.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that like creates an interesting maximum nezek, right? If the poel, let's say we're in a pishtan like case, and the pishtan is worth $1,000, and the poel's rate is $100, and the poel quits in the middle. Theoretically, it's in his interest to spend $300 to hire new workers rather than suffer the cost of the pishtan, which will be far greater.
Right.
So how does that play into our calculus in terms of what the poll's interests are and what might work better for him?
So you're saying specifically in a case where the nezek is worth less than sochar alein? Sorry, when the nezek is worth more than sochar alein?
Is worth more, exactly.
Yeah, so I think in that case it's obvious. So we'll come back to this in a second, Gabe. I would say just hold off for a moment on the Nezek questions, because we're going to talk about Nezek at the end of the... And if we're going to talk about Nezek in a few minutes, then we'll relate it to this question. So hold off on that for a few moments. I see Adam has a hand.
Yeah, this is mainly because I think I wasn't here for the last half hour Tuesday, but I do not fully understand what the Muxak is doing for us.
Okay, does anybody want to take a stab at explaining to Adam? Yoni, you want to, this is your, you like the Mufsak idea. So Yoni, you want to take a stab at it?
Sure. Well, like the basic argument is that if the criteria for when you'd be mechayev, the entirety of the property is based on Mufsak, or you just have the property in your hand, then it shouldn't really matter whether or not the property was given to you, that piece, that item was given to you as part of this work, or it just happened to have that property in your hand anyway.
Well, Adam, is that your issue? Adam, is your issue on just the whole Muchzakas question, or specifically how Muchzakas relates to whether it's the Dmei Achavil or any Mamon?
I guess a bit of all of it.
Okay. How about this? How about we, maybe we should just go over it separately afterwards. I'll try to... Let's talk about it right after the Chabura. I'll give you a quick summary of what I think the best way to explain the Muchzakas view is.
Okay.
Okay, unless everyone is everyone else having trouble with the Muchzakas view, or is it more or less clear? So how about this? Give me a thumbs up if you're good with the Muchzakas view. Okay, I see a thumbs up from Donnie. Gabe? What's Gabe? What is that?
I understand the view. So super convinced by it.
Right, yeah, I'm not asking whether you love the view, I'm asking whether you're Yakir. Thumbs up, Yakir, or Yakir?
I was muted, sorry. I think I'm more or less with Gabe.
You're Gabe, meaning you understand, you just don't like it.
I think so.
Yeah. Donnie's with them, I think that's what that meant. Ben's driving, so we don't want him to crash. Looks like he's good with it, though. Fine, so...
I know, I'm good. I mean, it's mostly for, like, if you're uncomfortable with the idea of Motsi Mamon for something like this, no?
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, if you're uncomfortable being Motsi Mamon, then, like, here's a time where that's not really a problem.
That's right. I mean, the idea is that the way I like to explain it. I'm just going to mute. I think the way I like to explain it is that you could think of there being weak duties versus strong duties, or weak claim rights against strong claim rights. And if something's a very strong claim right, then the halacha will allow you to assert it, even if it cuts into somebody else's cheskas mamon. It's really cutting into what the halacha sees as theirs. If something is only a weak claim right, then the halacha won't allow you to assert it against the cheskas mamon, but it will allow you to assert it if it's consistent with your cheskas mamon. And so the idea is just that whether the chavila is in your rishus or not will determine whether you're muchzak such that you could assert your weak cheskas mamon. Adam, does that help?
Yeah, but in a case where you have the klei umanut, and theoretically the cost that you're incurring is more than that, and theoretically it doesn't seem to have much to do with it. So when you use the fact to get the klei umanut to charge, you know, 40, 50 zuzim for 3 years of his job, what's the relationship?
Okay, so this is a point that was mentioned last time. I think if you hold that the significance of the klei umanut is that it offsets a cheskas mamon, or it makes the cheskas mamon point in your direction, and which allows you to assert this weak claim right, then your ability to collect would be capped at the value of the chavila. It wouldn't allow you to collect more than the demei chavila, which is not necessarily true for the Kinyan theory, right?
Okay,
good. Okay, I'm glad we're able to clarify that. Good. Okay, what I want to discuss now is these other remedies. So remember that our sugya only discusses two remedies, sochar alehen and matan. And okay, within sochar alehen we have two different versions. We have the version of ad kedei demehem and the version of arbaim v'chamishim zuz in the case of b'chavil v'yado. But in terms of our sugya, the remedies for davar ha'avod are limited to sochar alehen and matan. And recall that we saw the tour who thought that there's even a hierarchy within these remedies. You first have to do the deception, the matan. You have to exhaust that possibility. I tried to explain that that's because that's like a primary obligation of the contract to perform. And only once you exhaust that primary obligation of performance can you have recourse to these secondary remedies of like hiring new workers and charging the breacher for the costs of the new workers. That's what we got out of our sugya. The question looming in the background is there a more basic remedy of being able to compel the worker into finishing performance? And literally the Bezdin comes in and they force the guy to finish the job with physical coercion or something along those lines. So Argamar is silent on this, which is quite notable. You would think that if that remedy existed, the Gemara should tell us, Sochar alei and matan o kofen oso ligmar amalacha. But our Gemara doesn't mention it at all. So it's a bit of an open question. Do any of you have thoughts just on whether or not you think, in principle, kofen bal karcho should be a valid remedy for davar ha'avod? Anybody? Okay, so we could take a look at the Achronim here, and then you could weigh in after we see them. So the Machane Ephraim in Hilchos Schiras Paulim Simen Zayin. The Machane Ephraim, I think, takes a stand on this. Remember, we saw this discussion where he talks about the case of the woman who hired the Mishareses, and the Mishareses wanted to breach before Yontif. And so we saw this in the context of whether leaving before Yontif, is that a kind of a Davar Ha'avud? The Machane Ephraim thought so, and therefore he says the following: the Mishareses can't back out. The Havada Yediyah she'ein tipula shel bayis shave b'chol azmanim, ela kol lefi azman lefi rov hamasa. Right, so it's not like housework is steady; it's more urgent in certain situations. If it's man haregel hare hamalacha meruba kedei levar hachametz min habayis. So it's considered a davar ha'avod right before Yontif because there's so much work that has to get done. V'kivan shekein, yachol balabayis la'akev al hamishareset shelo tachserva b'soch zmana. Sounds from here that the balabayis can be ma'akev, can prevent the worker from breaching within the duration of the contract. So this sounds to me that there's a real claim right to compel specific performance of the agreement in a case of davar avod. That's the language of yachal balabais la'akev, to block, to prevent the mishareses from leaving. So I just think from the language of the Machane Ephraim, it seems like he recognizes kofin bal karcho, or being ma'akev, as a remedy for davar ha'aved. Yoni has a comment.
Yeah, didn't we see this point like already like clearly in the Rishon already? Like, didn't the Rambam make it pretty clear that like you can't be chozer in davar aved?
Yeah,
like that seems
to he said eino yachol, right? So he said eino yachol lachzor. That was his language, but that's ambiguous between just there being a duty to finish the job, so what Hofeld would call a legal obligation, but it's not obvious that the legal obligation to finish the job gives rise to a right to compel with force, to compel specific performance, like kfias bezdin. So the question as to whether there's a legal obligation to see the contract through is really separate from what remedies are available to you to see that duty satisfied.
I don't really get it. If you have a legal obligation to do something, can't Basin compel you to complete that legal obligation?
No, not always. That's the point, right? If we think that, like the Avnei Nezer thought, for example, that any time you're compelling performance, that's already going to be a kind of avdos, and so we're never going to be allowed to compel you to finish it. Instead, we'd have to go for some sort of payment of damages, something like that. Does that answer your question, Yoni?
I guess. I'm not sure. I'm looking at the Rambam.
Yeah. The Rambam's language is eni yachol lachzor. And that speaks to the legal obligation to remain. But I think that's silent as to what the available remedies are. Adam, you have a hand?
Yeah. I guess along Yoni's point, does the interpretation amongst the Haronim of whether you can be ma'akev someone, does that pivot around the point of your interpretation of would it means be yachol lachzor, like in a general sense?
One more time.
The Acharonim's interpretation of whether or not you could be ma'akev someone to complete a job, does that pivot around their understanding of what it means to be able to be chozer?
I don't think so. This is similar to my answer to Yoni. I think that you could say ein yachol lachzor, ein yachol lachzor, while not holding that you could be ma'akev alav milachzor, or without holding that you could physically coerce him to remain.
So then where does Machne Ephraim's position come from? Where is he getting his strength?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think that he... Well, let me get to that in a minute, okay?
Okay.
Okay, good. So I think that's one view of the Machne Ephraim. That's the Machne Ephraim. The second source that takes a stand on this is the Shaar Ephraim in Simen Kuf Lamed Ches. Based off this Tosefta in Bava Mitzia in Parakeet Aleph Halacha Chav Zayin, which we actually had seen earlier in this man. Just give me 30 seconds to check on something, and then I'll be right back, guys. Give me 30 second break. Okay, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna continue recording.
This meeting is being recorded.
So we had seen this Tosefta already in Parakeet Aleph Halacha Chav Zayin. The Tosefta, again, it talked about a balon l'rabim, a sapar l'rabim, a nachton l'rabim, shulchan l'rabim. So it's somebody who has a job in the community who provides some sort of public service, right? He's either the barber, he's the caterer, he's the baker of the town. And there's no one else who can replace him. And it comes the yontif time and he wants to leave the town early, which would leave the town unable to satisfy their yontif needs. So the Tosafta said, "Yecholim la'akev alav al yadav ad sheyamid acher tachtav." They could really prevent him from leaving until he finds a replacement for himself. Now, the question here is whether this is relevant to our sugya. So the Shaar Ephraim in Siman Kuf Lamed Ches pointed out that there's a view in the Rishonim that interprets this Tosafta as referring not to a poel or a kablon, so it's not nogeh to schiras poelim. It's just referring to a general worker in the community. So you happen to be a self-employed caterer or baker, but the community needs your services. And then Tosefta is telling us about the extraordinary powers that a community has to commandeer your services for the public good. You know, it's like here, imagine today during this pandemic, you know, if the government said, we need everybody who's able to work in making ventilators to start working in ventilator factories or something. So they think that this Tosefta is taking a position on the powers of a community to, I guess, satisfy the provision of public goods. It's really silent on the question of Schiras Poalim. But, and the Shaar Ephraim brings a raya that there's this, remember this tshuva, the Maharam Rittenberg that we had seen earlier in the year. The Maharam brings a raya from this Tosefta to say, if you live in a community that only has 10 people, the community could prevent you from leaving before Yontif if they need you for a minyan. Right? Here's he quoted the tshuva of the Maharam Rittenberg. Im rotza echad mehem latzeis mehe ir kodem yam minaroyim ve'ein sham el minyan mitzumtzam kofen oso sheyamid acher bimkomo. Well, maybe raya min ha-Tosefta. And he brings a proof from this Tosefta, which shows that it's not really about employment law at all, right? It's about the needs of the community being able to compel you to satisfy what they need you to provide. But Donnie Ritholtz has a hand. Go, Donnie.
I know this is really not so relevant to what we're saying, but or like to the topic, but why do you think is it? It's just Yontif. That they could be kofin.
Yeah, I don't think it's just Yontif. I think it's just Tosefta is giving us one scenario where that's like a pressing communal need.
No, but I'm for minyan though, that is in particular.
In the Tshuva of the Maharam.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think it. I think it's just an example that came up that he was asked about. But I think if it was any like necessary communal need, you know, the chiddush here is that minyan's considered to be a necessary communal need.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Right.
But if I'm saying, like, is it specifically, like, maybe it's more of a historical point about how often, like, they actually had or needed to be in, like, that it was specifically for Yontif or whatever. It's not really that.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Like, you know, it gives you some insight into the structure of the communities. And, But I think for the lumdisha purposes, I don't think it's limited to those considerations. I think it's really when there's a communal need.
That's what I was just trying to make sure of that.
Yeah. Good. Adam Mann, hand?
Yeah, I guess, like, also, like, on Danny's point, like, to bring back to Daf Yomi, like, there is, like, the question of what is the individual's obligation to complete the minyan.
Yeah.
It's just a specific question that has...
Yeah, it's Chovas HaTzibor, Chovas HaYachid.
I think, like, that also part of the question of, you know, whether something like minyan has a different din, theoretically, if we look at it from the Tzibor's perspective,
right,
than the barber.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, this is really not our central concern here. This is just the way of reading the Tosefta that would make it irrelevant to our discussion because it's not about employment law. But Shaar Ephraim quotes others. He calls V'yesh shirotzen lahamid haTosefta hanal b'sachir o'kablon v'habe k'davar ha'aved. So he says some people read this Tosefta actually as referring to a barber or a caterer or a baker who's actually employed by the community. And the Tosefta is telling us that before Yontif to Davar Aved, they hired this guy to provide matzahs, let's say, before Yontif. He's not allowed to back out before Yontif now because backing out would be a Davar Aved. In which case, what can we infer from the Tosefta if it's talking about a scenario of a poel b'davar ha'aved? Yakir? Yakir?
Sorry, I think the Tosefta sounds like it could be Makir.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We could infer from the Tosefta that in a Davar Aved, Yecholin La'akev Al Yadav, you could actually prevent him from leaving until he provides somebody to stand in his stead. So if this Tosefta is talking about Schiras Poalim, as the Shaar Ephraim tells us that some Rishonim indeed read it, as talking about Schiras Poalim, then we can infer from here that there's this Rishus La'akev Alav to actually prevent him from leaving. And that's what the Shaar Ephraim says. What do you do with the fact that our Sugya in Bav Mitzia doesn't mention Kofin Oso or Ma'akev Alav as a remedy? Our Sugya only refers to Sochar Le'enu Matan. So how does the Shaar Ephraim deal with that? Gabe, you want to read it for us?
Are you sure it's going to have any other stuff from where you're heading? Where should I start?
You could just, when he addresses our Gemara, I, Darminan, the Gemara, Socher, Lena Matan.
I know, because you have a lot of people ask your problem about your emails,
That's right. He says it's only if so it says yes, the Gemara in Bamitzia says Socher Alein Omatan. But that's not really relevant to us. Why? Or why does that not teach us that kfiya is not a remedy? Gabe?
Because if you're exhausted, you don't have those options. They're...
Yeah, that's right. He says that it's only if our Gemara talks about Socher Alein Omatan, kishe yachol lehatoso lehaskir po'alim. He's saying those are like the preferred remedies. Or there are prior remedies in halacha that first you're supposed to try to deceive him or lahasker po'alim acherim. But as a remedy of last resort, kfiya is an option. It doesn't appear in the Gemara in Bava Metzia because it's not a preferred remedy. You have to exhaust those remedies first before you could resort to kfiya. Aval im ein motzi in tmuraso vi eino yachal lahato. So if you've exhausted those remedies, Kofin as apoel o akablam ligmar malachta bedavar ave. Then you could resort to kfiya. So I think the way the Shaar Ephraim deals with this problem of kfiya not being listed in our Gemara is through this strategy of a hierarchy. That the Gemara Bava Metzia is telling us the first two remedies, when those preferred remedies are not available, then you could go for kfiya. Yoni has a hand.
Yeah, his hierarchy is kind of unintuitive. Right, and then if you're gonna talk about the order of being kofis someone, then you would have thought that it'd be first kfiya, and then if you can't force them to perform specific performance, so at that point you either mate or socher alein, not the reverse. Not that you socher alein and mate, and then if you can't, then you're kofis. That doesn't really make much sense, and I'm not even sure why he's motivated to say this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting. I see why you think that, because you're thinking, like we said earlier in the tour, that the primary obligations of the contract are to perform. And so compelling performance should be, you know, the first remedy, right?
That's also just a logical thing. And then, in terms of, human nature, the first thing I try doing is forcing you to keep working. If you can't work, then I have to resort to all sorts of tricks. But if I could just force you to work to begin with, why am I resorting to be mate to trick you? I could just force you to work.
Yeah, Donnie?
I think you're missing one of the big issues here that we haven't seen it in a while, but doesn't this get us back into Ki Leib and Israel territory that this is real Avdus at this point? Yeah. So yes, maybe the natural thing might be to force the person, but Halacha is coming in to say this is the last and final option because we have this overriding principle that Bnei Israel are not slaves.
Yeah, and remember the language of the Avnei Nezer that we saw earlier, who thought that any time there's kfiya, even in a kablan, that's going to border in Kili Bnei Israel Avadim. And so actually the Halacha never wants to resort to kfiya, given its general preference to minimize cases of quasi-avdus. Anytime you're compelling somebody to perform on a contract that they don't want to perform on, you're already bordering into avdus land in virtue of the kfiya, right? So I think so you're right, Yoni, that in terms of the primary obligations or in terms of what's natural, you might think, yeah, compel them to perform. But I think Donnie's right to say that that's undercut by the consideration of ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. So I think that's exactly the tension here. And the Shaar Ephraim is going in for the idea that we want to stay away from kfiya, we want to stay away from these kinds of avdus coercion cases. Adam.
I guess I would also suggest, along with Donnie, with what Donnie said, and also with what Yoni said, is I think sort of at the root of it all is you're trying to compel him, that's the root of being Ma'atad, being Zohar Alehan. Right? Because in general case, if you want to compel someone to do something, then you need some type of collateral against the person to force them to do it.
That's interesting. It's an interesting suggestion. You're thinking about this economically. You're saying maybe even the idea of, you know, matan maybe is a kind of coercion, but I would say it's like an unproblematic coercion because it doesn't really
still unproblematic.
Yeah.
I think it's problematic when you have to brute force. Money doesn't matter anymore. It's just, we're going to chain you up and make you do the job.
Right. By the way, that's why I think the tour thinks you have a duty of matan prior to Socher Alein, because you're able to satisfy the primary obligations of the contract without any problematic issues of kfiya. But I'm less convinced by your argument that Socher Alein is a kind of economic incentive or deterrence. It's a kind of economic kfiya. That's the way you're looking at it. I hear that, but I don't see that as economic. I don't see it as an economic sanction as a way of trying to get you to finish the contract. I see it as a kind of remedy where the poel has a duty to finish the contract, and that if he's not going to finish it himself, then the halacha allows you to at least shift some of the costs of completion onto him. So I'm not convinced that it's a version of kfiya.
Well, I think it functions differently if you're dealing with the case of davar avod or not. If it's davar avod, then there's true financial loss that can be incurred by the poel, versus if it's not, then you may have the question, well, he's not really having any financial loss.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a suggestion. It's just not my sense from reading the sources, but I like the idea. Donnie, are you disinfecting your space over there? You're muted.
Just wiping something up. Not disinfecting. That doesn't make any sense.
You're like protecting yourself from your own coronavirus germs, you know? Okay. I think there's another source that takes a stance on this idea of kfiya. So we have the Marit, our good old tshuva. So the Marit, remember this tshuva with the Talmud Chacham, who was hired for 2 years, and the first group loved him. They're shosin batzamas dvarav, and they loved coming to shiurim. They loved when he gave them musar. And then there was another group that got jealous, and they tried to poach him, and they succeeded in poaching him. And then the rabbi felt bad that he breached his contract with the first group. Does this ring familiar to the Olam? Okay, good. So the Marit discussed whether that was a Davar HaAvod. He came down saying it was a Davar HaAvod, because remember, if they really liked this Talmud Chacham, in Adam Lomed Al B'Makom Shalibo Chafetz, and so it's like an irreparable loss for them to lose their teacher. And so he thought that the Talmud Chacham was not allowed to be chozer and move to the new group. But then in the very last line of the tshuva, the Maharit says the following. He says, it sounds like he's holding that the first group could actually compel the rabbi not to leave them. And he says this, Teha d'al karchach shibuda isle labal abayis al gufo. The Baal HaBayis has a real lien against the poel himself. From the memory we saw earlier in the year, that a poel can't just go with mechila, he needs like a shtar shichror, he needs a kinyan to allow him to go free. And this really touches on something that Yoni pointed out, I think, in an email to the group earlier a few weeks ago, where Yoni said that the idea of the inability to be chozer b'davar ha'aved seems to be tied to this idea of gufo kanoi. And we see the Marit doing that here. And he says, because the employer has this kind of shibud haguf in the poel, he says, Alma ain alav tvias mamon, ela tvias guf. It's not just that the employer has some monetary claim right or a claim right against the finances of the poel. He has some real claim right that inheres in the poel's person, which he's going to argue justifies kfiya. That justifies compelling the worker to perform. It's not just like you have some equivalent right to penalize him financially for backing out. You have a real right that inheres in the person. You have a claim right against the person of the poel to ensure that he finishes the job. And therefore, he says, you could compel him. What about our sugya, which seems to limit the remedies to socher alein o matan? So he says, Lo amru socher alein o matan el lefi she'enu yachal lechofo. But im hayam motzei bezdin, hayu kofen oso bal korcho. It sounds like he's saying, yes, enochanami, of course there's the right to compel the worker to finish the job. You have a kinyan haguf on him with respect to the malacha. The reason why the Gemara in Bava Metzia doesn't discuss kviya is just because the Gemara is assuming it's difficult to find a bezdin to enforce kviya. So absent a bezdin to enforce kviya, it's always going to be an easier remedy to be matan or socher aleihem. They're remedies that are easier to execute. But in terms of Meikar Adin, he thinks that kfiya is a remedy. And not only that, it sounds to me from the language of the Marit that kfiya is actually a primary remedy, as Yoni was telling us, as Yoni thought earlier. And our Gemara is only telling us the remedies of Socher Leinu Matan because, it's assuming that you're not going to be in a town that has a Bezdin that's able to actually compel performance. But in a Hanami, it sounds like compelling performance is a primary remedy. Maybe it's even the preferred remedy. And it's only if Eino Yachol Lachofo, because there's no Bezdin, that you have to resort to Socher Leinu Matan. But Im Hayamotze Bezdin, Hayukofen Oso Bat Karcho, as a primary remedy. So I think what you get here in the Marit is similar to the Shire Ephraim. Both recognize that there's a remedy of Kfiya. Both recognize that that's at odds with our Sugya. But they disagree in how they explain why Kfiya is absent from our Sugya. For the Shire Ephraim, it's because Kfiya is just a remedy of last resort. You have to exhaust Kofar Le'anu Matan first. For the Marit, it's the exact opposite. Kfiya is a remedy of first resort. It's not in our Gemara just because it's assumed that it'll be difficult to get a Bezdin to compel performance. But in principle, it's a primary remedy. Okay, does anybody have questions on this last part of the discussion?
Yeah, good question. Is it clear to everybody that Kfiya includes Beit Din and only Beit Din can enforce Kfiya? Or is there a version of Kfiya of Pokonoso which can work implicitly?
Yeah, really, really good question. I'm not sure that the Marit here mentions Bezdin. Hayamotza Bezdin Hayakofano. So, like, how else would you compel him? You know, you twist his arm or you threaten to harm him.
Kill anti-justice.
Right, Avid in his Dina Lanafshe. But that we're going to.
Some of us might have guns and.
That's right. All right. But would the halacha sanction that kind of physical violence if it's not regulated by some court interference? You might say no for, you know, those kinds of considerations. But it's hard to know. The Marit talks about Bezdin. I think in the language of the Shire Ephraim, he didn't mention Bezdin, right? Kofin es hapoel ligmar melachto. And even the language of the Tosefta, yicholim la'akev al yado, and in the language of the Machane Ephraim, Yachal la'akev. They don't mention anything about Bezdin, so maybe the remedies would be broader than Bezdin. So, yeah, Gabe, it's a fair point. Do you have further thoughts on it, or?
No, I'm just far more comfortable with the Bezdin version of it. Right? As to Donnie's point about whether this feels like a violation of Abba Daim.
Yeah, I agree. Look, the fact that the Mishnah really talks about Matan is a kind of non-violent way, a non-intrusive way of getting at the result of kfiya without physical coercion, and maybe only Bezdin would be allowed to exert physical pressure. Yeah. Yoni.
Yeah, I'd add that, it's not, we're going to get to it, but it's not like right here on these lists. Another mekor for the same idea of specific performance.
Was the shach? Yeah, you mentioned the shach in the last chabura, right?
Yeah. I think it's on the curve somewhere. Not here.
Yeah. Because the Shach also talked about Kfiya, right?
Yeah, he talked about that, he's trying to explain like the Sheet of Rashi, like a certain read of it, and he pretty much says that the whole sugya here is only where we're talking about their chozer, Baal Korfa Shal Baal Bayit, and the Baal Bayit can't force them.
Right.
Like where there's no Beit Din.
Right.
Or She'en Saitin Din. But yeah. If there's a Beit Din, or if there's like some other way of like forcing him to do something, so then we refer to Socher Leinu Matan.
Yeah. Was that in the discussion of Bachavil Liado?
Yeah.
I think that's where it would have been. I think...
Shach Lamed Dalet. Shach Lamed Gimel Lamed Dalet.
Yeah. I have it here on the Makor, so let me pull it up for a second. His discussion of Mordechai. Yeah, Lamed Daled. He said, yeah, Nir Lefiya Staiti. The Gam Rashi Mode Deheka de Mashach Mea Kablam Klia Umanos. Eino Yachal Lachzer Klal Bishum Mamon. Right? There's no money that would justify. If there's a real Kenyan Schiras Poelim, like in Mashichas Klia Umanos, nothing would justify the Poel. No amount of money would justify the Poel backing out. Why then does the Gemara just say Sochalei Namata and Mayri Hacha Kshem Chosen Bal Karcha Shabal Habayis the Ein Biyad Habal Habayis Lachofan Kigon She'ein Kan Bezdin O She'ein Am Tzaisin Din. Right? So here it sounds explicit that, to address Gabe's point, it sounds explicit that there's no remedy, there's no means of Kfiyah available B'makom She'ein Kan Bezdin. Right? Which is a really good point here. So yeah, I'm going to copy this and add it to our discussion here of Kfiya, because he also this is very consistent with the Maritz formulation, right, Yoni?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it also says that Kfiya is a remedy of first resort, and Sochar Le'Namaton is only if that's not available. So let me, I'm going to add this actually to our discussion down here. Thank you, and it also helps us solve Gabe's question. I also thought there's another source, I mean, related to that. The Mordechai, I thought, also took a stand on this. Because you remember the Mordechai in Simon, in Remez Shin Mem Ches, he didn't like Rashi's, he didn't like the reading of Rashi that suggested that it's only when the Chavila of the Malacha is Baliyad Brishas Balabayas, that only then could he be Sochar Aleh and Ad Kedei Arba Mechamishim Zuz. And he had this strange objection. He said, because if it's the Demeha Chavila, Imkein Heich Yochol Lachzerbo, Ha Havi Mashicha Gemura, how could the Poel back out at all and pay 40 or 50 of the amount? He shouldn't be allowed to back out altogether. Which sounds that in the Mordechai's mind, he's really quoting Rabbi Baruch here, it sounds like he thinks that there are stronger, if there's a real Kenyan, there are remedies available that are stronger than just Arba Mechamishim Zuz. If there's a real Kenyan Mashicha, then Heich Yochol Lachzerbo, there should be no ability to back out altogether, right? But I think it's not obvious that that would result in Kfiyah, so I'm a little not sure about that Mordechai's formulation. But definitely the Shach's formulation is very good for us. Okay, good. Any other comments on this discussion? Let me see. Oh, Adam has a hand.
Yeah, Maharit, is he specifically talking about Davar Avad?
Yeah, in that discussion, I think he's talking about Davar Avad. The Raya, by the way, is that he refers to Sochar Aleinu Matan, which is the Gemara's prescribed remedy for a Davar Avad case.
Right, but the Lashon of Dakach Shavoda Itlein Babais Al Gufo, that implies that this is the general king, so in any case... Right.
Yeah. Right. But remember that in a non-Davar Avad case, the Poel has the special right to back out without a penalty. So I think that would undercut whatever Kenyan Aguf there is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think you're raising a really interesting point about how the mechanics of how all these things interact. And this is a little bit about what Yoni was emailing about last week. You know, what's the mechanical relationship between Poel Gufo Kanoi, Rishus Kiliben Yisrael Avadim Yachal Poel Lachzer Afilu Bem Sam Lacha and Davar Ha'aved. Right? Is like one overriding the other. So it's like the general rule that there's no Kenyan Aguf, but there is somehow a new Kenyan Aguf in a Davar Ha'aved case. Or is the rule that there usually is a Kenyan Aguf, but Kiliben Yisrael Avadim gives you a special Rishus Lachzer despite that. And then there's the special Rishus Lachzer is suspended or is blocked in a case of Davar Aved. So I think we actually would want to go back eventually and figure out based on these formulations, and we take a meta, big picture view about how these different pieces interact with each other. Okay, Adam? Yeah. Yoni, that touches on the point you made in your email, right?
Yeah. I mean, we discussed it a little bit, I think this was on Tuesday during the APAC. Things I don't know if people were here, but we discussed a little bit that I think the Maharit seems to argue that even if there's not usually Gufo Kanoi, Davar Avod makes it Gufo Kanoi.
Yeah.
In some ways that Davar Avod actually changes like the very nature of the relationship between between the Po'el and the Malbides.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Okay, good. That's it. That's really it for the kfiya discussion. Anybody have any lingering issues they want to raise on the kfiya discussion before we move on to the question of chiyuv po'el b'nezikin? Any further comments on this? No, everyone's good?